Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Richard Wilmore.
What's going on with my hair? Hi, everyone. Welcome to Make Your Day Richer. It's Friday. We did it. We made it through another week, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad Dr. Rodberger is here, because he has a book coming out next month called The Narrative Edge, Authentic Storytelling that Meets the Moment, and I'm excited to talk to him about that so we can all learn about why storytelling is so important. We're also going to play a little game and win something, hopefully, for the audience. So I think we should start the show. Hit it, big internet.
Make your day rich. Than it was before. Got some good times knocking upon your front door.
Well, Rod, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. I just absolutely love this setup.
Well, you can steal it for any time you need it. It's it's not copywritten, and I just got sick of two Zoom screens next to each other. So I thought, how can I make you feel like you're more in the studio with me? You know,
it's like Nickelodeon meets Johnny Carson.
Exactly. Thank you. I will steal that clip for my own marketing story. But I wanted to talk to you. I reached out to you to be on the show because I love what you're doing by the gazillion interviews you have done and providing a space for people to tell their stories and to learn from one another and learn about things in the world. And I think that's so important as we get more and more digital and virtual and seemingly together, but separate, as I'm sure you know. Why is it important for you to, one, provide that platform? And what does it do to the people that you're talking to?
Gosh, what does it do to the people I'm talking to is where I think I would start first. I don't know. I'm a pretty simple guy, Richard, right? I think story is what defines us. It's what connects us. Mm-hmm. And after 4,000 interviews, it's definitely an affliction that I have. Or an addiction, I should say, maybe, or both.
I understand that.
Because there's something that happens when you connect with somebody, yeah. Especially people that are, I mean, what's interesting is, there are people that I would say, wow, we're from the same island, right? And then there are people that I'm in a different land, a different culture, and yet I can still have the same feeling, even though there's nothing about our lives that are alike in any form or fashion, other than that we both share the same species. We're part of the same species. I don't know what they get out of it. I will tell you that if I'm interviewing somebody and they say to me, I've never been asked that before, there's something inside of me that just feels good that I was, mm-hmm. that sort of confirmation that I was living in the moment. And I think that it's so interesting because I just spoke with a gentleman who his goal is to talk with 10,000 people. And I think he's north of 6,000 already. And he's been on lots of national media, super neat guy. And I just said, look, if I was interviewing you, I would really want to understand your relationship to time and to completion. And also fear around that. And I think that's kind of where I sit when it's, what do these stories or these interviews do for me? They bring me closer to myself, which then makes it sound very selfish. But I learn about myself in ways that previously I only felt when I went and saw a great movie, or I heard a song, or I was at a concert. And for whatever reason, the ambiance, the temperature, the environment, you know, maybe the beverage I had, whatever it was, kind of positioned me and put me on a platform to experience everything that was in front of me. And I think that capturing these stories, one, I'm humbled by people's trust in me. Probably, you know, that's the first thing. And then two, it's allowed me to think in that same way as if I was in 97 or whenever it was watching Good Will Hunting for the eighth time somewhere near the campus of Michigan State University in East Lansing, because there was something that connected me to that story as a young man. So it's, for me, it's that connection over and over and over again. And I can now get that in a way that I don't have to walk into a movie theater. I don't have to go to a concert. Those things are amazing and great. But I've made it much more part of my daily life. And in doing so, hopefully, I'll look back and say it was a richer life in that regard. But I feel incredibly lucky. I pinch myself that I get put in these different environments. And I'm always fearful, Richard, that the one I was just at would be the last. So, with you today, one, I'm excited about what will come of my, you know, in my books coming out, The Narrative Edge, Authentic Storytelling That Meets the Moment. My shameless plug there, my publisher, Wiley. But I don't know what's coming. And that, some, you know, that kind of sits at the forefront of my mind. And you get a little bit nervous about that because you just know it's like a drug to connect mm-hmm. with people in such a way.
Yeah. I, when I do this show, I did 299 episodes last season. And I, my, like, my thought process is always you go until it like becomes too much work and you're not excited to meet people anymore. And then I take a break. And that usually lasts about 3 weeks. And then I'm like, I need that again. And so I need, and I always think it's going to be longer, but I get so excited to talk to people that it is, like you said, it's kind of an addiction.
Yeah. And you, and I don't know about you, but I, so I'm a yes guy for better or for worse. And I think at the end of my life, I'll look back and say, saying yes was probably the right way to go more often than it was not. You know, I'm slightly probably above the Mendoza line, but I'm not batting 1,000. I'm not Ted Williams. And in saying yes, that is maybe the part that's actually the addiction, because sometimes I fear like if I get a note on a weekend, right, there's a part of me that says I shouldn't read it, shouldn't check out that instant message because it's the weekend and that's my time, right?
Yeah.
Or family time. But man, Richard, I've had so many times when I've opened up an email at the most inopportune time, right, as the plane is taking off or whatever it is, and it's led to something that if I track back, I think I would have never been on the African continent had I not opened up that random email on a Sunday morning that I thought initially was spam, right? And so mm-hmm. I'm a bit like a kid in that way. Like I'm very optimistic that, wow, you know, right? You know, you and I might put together a television show one day, or we might write a book together. You just never know, right? Yeah. Because that's how my life has played out. And it's exciting and a little nerve-wracking at times, but I absolutely understand that where you need a little bit of a break, you know, that was probably one of the most challenging pieces about writing the book was I had to sit within the stories that had been swirling in my head or that I've written or that I've captured over podcast or video. And do that in a way where you kind of have to sit back in time. It's really an odd thing. And then reflect on the experiences and then the sort of the after effects, right? Sort of when the camera was turned off. And then the responsibility of, can I remember the key components that I think make what I hope is a book that is meaningful for people, right? And there were certain times where I would think to myself, how could I forget this one element, right? Because the book, 35-40% of it is my story as well, because I don't think I can be authentic in sharing stories with you if I don't talk about the impact story has had on me. And so you learn a lot about me. And there were plenty of times where I just sort of looked up to the ceiling and said, you know, I forgot. And it didn't make that connection. And thank goodness I caught it before the manuscript was finished. So it's a constant battle. It's a tango that never ends with music that just continues to play in my mind.
I love that. The Narrative Edge is the book that we're talking about. It comes out in November, correct?
You can pre-order now. And by the way, Richard, I had no idea how the publishing world worked, right? Pre-orders in this world of algorithms are so incredibly important. I have a lot of friends that are like, oh, I'm going to get it. And they want to wait until they can get it and it hits their front door, right, the next day. And I was just last week, I just came back from the Nordics and I met up with a buddy of mine that I've known for several years. And we were talking about, you know, the book, and he just said, oh, I was going to wait till November. And so he purchased it right there because I guess that's how bookstores know if they should be carrying it and then the volume that they should be carrying, right? So that's a weird spot to be in when you're a storyteller and you want to be authentic and then you're pitching yourself in that regard. So slightly uncomfortable to say the least, but yes, if people are interested, they can go to my website, drrodberger.com, and I've got all the links for whatever bookstores that they appreciate and they shop at on a regular basis.
Well, and can you talk a little bit about what people are going to find in the book when they get it, when they pre-order it now, and then it arrives at the doorstep in November?
Well, so a couple of things. One, if they pre-order it, they're going to get the lost chapter. So that has just been finished. Boy, that was a challenge too from a storytelling perspective. You just feel like I don't know about you, but when I complete something, I just want to feel as if it's done. It's art in that way, right? Yeah. I fashion myself as a bit of a painter in that way, but yet I I don't think I could paint for anybody. No one's going to buy my painting. Maybe it's some flea market in some very small town. But that's how I think. And so to then go back and write a lost chapter that would be an incentive for people was an interesting process for me. And one that was written in large part on a train from Stockholm to Oslo just last week. And so then I'm a romantic at heart, you know, at heart. And so just that notion of that ride and writing that for me speaks volumes just about the experience, right? So what they can expect. Well, what can they expect? Look, I didn't realize it in the beginning. So Wiley came to me. I'm very fortunate for that. I know that that's not sort of the typical path people take. And they said, look, we're really interested in a book on storytelling. It's everybody's interested in this topic, regardless of sector, and or sort of where they're located around the world. And so, you know, we think you could do something interesting. And I just said, look, if you want like the 5 to 7 steps on how to write or tell a better story, I am not your guy. That's just not me. And they said, no. You do you, which was really a wonderful thing to be told creatively. And so I did. And I didn't know it until I was probably 2 or 3 chapters in. But really what you can expect is, it's a sort of, this will date me a little bit, Richard, but it's like an album, right? So, you know, let's say your third album's coming out. Someone asks me, well, tell me about Richard's third album. And it's like, I'll talk about the sensibility of it, right? Sort of the feeling, the aura of it, sort of the color palette that might go with it. It's like describing a wine. And I intentionally wrote the book that way so that you could read chapter 5 first, like it's side A or side B of the album, and it's not going to matter. You can sort of go back and forth. I really wanted it to be something that when you read it, you don't know it right away, but you start integrating in your own stories into the way in which you're processing the book. So I take you on adventures. My one goal was that every chapter, I wanted you to feel like you had a... yeah, it's sort of a nonstop ticket to places around the world where stories have impacted me. Because ultimately, I want people to understand that stories everywhere. You can't turn it off. You can't turn it on. And there are benefits to that. And sometimes there's a backslide because we don't understand how to process what's in front of us. If it's traumatic, if it's out of the blue and sudden, right? And so, and then the last thing you can expect is that every chapter there is a different way in which I convey a story that's either impacted me or that I've witnessed, right? So I opened the book. My late father grew up in Nazi Germany as a young boy. And so I ended up writing a story that he had conveyed only to me, but I did so in a way where it reads a little bit like a movie script. And I don't know why I did it that way, but that's what I felt in the moment when I was writing that. And in that chapter, I also then connect and I share a story of an interview I did with one of the preeminent scholars on socialism and Nazi Germany. And this guy leads like 134 experts around the world in this anthology they're putting together, right, of all the what we've learned about Nazi Germany and the like. And what he ends up telling me about the very story that I share. So I want there to feel like, I want you to feel that the highs and lows of story. I want you to resonate with stories where, yeah, pain was a part of it, or not knowing what the final conclusion would be. And so I share a lot of who I am, and hopefully that is something that resonates. Now, look, I don't know, what a humbling experience, Richard, to write a book. At first, the publisher, Wiley, said, oh, you know, send the manuscript to like 3 to 5 people just to get some testimonials. Well, I mean, that's scary enough because these are people that you think, well, they think highly enough of me at this point in time. But when I send it to them, maybe they will change their opinion. And I started to get what was fascinating is what I think this is a message for everybody. When you put yourself out there, and I think if you're vulnerable enough and you're humble enough and you're authentic in the way in which you communicate, you don't worry about writing to a specific audience or an individual. And in doing so, I think you actually create an opportunity for connection. And so it was a pretty neat experience to get feedback from people on different continents around the world that was incredibly similar, as if they had been a part of a book club in reading my manuscript. And so I hope that translates into, where it does well. Because my objective is not about, I don't think I'm going to make any money on a book. I mean, who makes money on books these days, right? it to me, it's, does it create enough buzz around story where I get the next opportunity to find the adventures that help me translate a world that is incredibly and increasingly confusing to people, including myself.
Yeah. How long did it take you to write it?
I had basically, it was like 4.5 months. Hmm. Now, if I did it again, I mean, I signed my deal in, I think it was maybe October of last year, but you're going into all the holiday time. I mean, you know, it's sort of the worst time, I think, to sign. I don't know if there's ever a good time because the clock starts ticking. You know when it's due. And my manuscript was due March 21st. And I'm going to tell you, with all my travel and everything else, that came really, really quickly because, we already had sort of family stuff set up in the holidays. And it's not like you can just go and write because you just told yourself it's in your calendar. So, you know, quite a process. But I look at my life and I don't know if this is life advice, but I do talk about it in the book, but I'm a huge sports fan. Sports played a big role in my life. And I'm not a big baseball fan. I love playoff baseball, but I didn't like playing it. It's too slow for me. But I do think of life in this way. Every interview I've had or sort of public stage I've been asked to be on, I think of them as at-bats. And the more at-bats I have, the closer I get to basically picking up the curveball before it slides right past my bat and into the catcher's mitt of life. And so all of the things that I've been a part of are at bats, and I'm excited for more of them. And writing the book in a compressed amount of time, and if I really told you how long it took, I that'll be my own personal secret, right? Because I used to be the kid that could write, you know, the term paper the night before. Uh-huh. Which is a dangerous skill to have. It's not one that I think people should be excited about because your brain says, oh, wait for the moment to be perfect, Richard. Like, oh, I was inspired, you know? I walked in and the flowers smelled amazing and the music was motivating or whatever it is. Now I'm ready to write. So I learned a lot about myself through that process, and I hope that's expressed and experienced for people when they read it.
Yeah, I've talked to musicians who will write a song in 15 minutes, and I've also talked to authors that a book has taken them 25 years to finish. So there are no, I think, rules around it. What did it feel like, okay, this is done, I am finished here, like art, or is it like art where you always are like, I guess I'm done, I can't work on this anymore, but there are some things that I would do?
So good question. Here's what I would say. I know that next week I will be recording the audiobook with producers downtown, and I'm interested in that process because I think I've been told that the element of an author, because typically it's a professional narrator that does it, and the publisher said, I think you might want to consider doing it just because of the work that you do and people will want to hear your voice. Mm-hmm. So that's a sort of a side conversation just about how awkward it is to send samples of your voice to the producers who are going to then choose your fate, right?
Am I good enough to read my own book? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, you get to decide.
That's right. And so the challenge that I'm going into, you know, sort of fully aware of, or at least as much as I can, is to turn off the editor inside of me, right? Like I'm going to have to connect over several hours and days next week with the manuscript in a way that I hope invites people in from an audio perspective, and allows me to express the feeling of the words on the page, whereby I'm not in the moment sort of editing or changing structure in my mind, because I'm a different person today than when I completed the manuscript last spring, right? So
what did you want to be when you were a kid, when you grew up?
So my dad looms large in the book, and I say that because when I was young, he was much older as a father, and the one point of connection that we had, and I can say this, he was classic German in sort of being very distant, not the most proficient communicator, emotionally speaking, but where we did connect was 60 Minutes every Sunday. And so even as a very young kid, like I probably shouldn't have been watching 60 Minutes when I was, because I couldn't process things, but that was our one point of connection. And so that's really where I think story started for me. And that's where I started thinking about actually being a correspondent on 60 Minutes and sort of digging and being a detective within story. So that's been with me for a very, very long time, but that's really the origin of it.
I love that. Where can people go to connect with you out in the world to pre-order the book? What's the best way?
So the best way is just drrodberger.com. B-E-R-G-E-R is the last name. And that's my handle at LinkedIn and Instagram. And I love getting messages from people. I'll answer my emails. I'm very public in that way. And I've just had too many experiences where I've found a new friend because somebody took a chance in a world where we feel like, when we send a message, it goes into outer space, and it just sort of never lands, right? So, that's where people can go and learn a little bit about me. And then I've got the Dr. Rod Berger channel, just from a podcast perspective, where all my different interviews are sort of pulled into one. I try to be as streamlined as I can, so I can connect with people.
Okay, good. What do you love most about your life right now?
Wow, what do I love most about my life right now? It's a long list. I will tell you, I'm thankful for my kids being at the age that they are because of the conversations that we have just about impact, making an impact. My daughter is going to be 11 and my son's 13. And I think it's just fascinating to explore the conversations that some of which I wish I would have had when I was a kid or had the ability to have or opportunity. But they're so powerful to me that they, I'm just amazed at what they come up with. I mean, I'll give you an example. The other night, my daughter and I, she's going to go for student council. She's in middle school now. And they also have, it's a very old school. And so they have sort of these I don't even know what you call them. It's like, they've got the Greers and the Plato's, right? And so kids get sort of designated right out of the gate. And there's this history and sort of these activities every year. So she's going for a Greer rep and also student council representative. And so we had to write two different speeches. And I just love seeing her creativity and her understanding of the way in which words can move people, right? Those little experiences that you just say, it sounds sort of transactional, right? It's homework, it's these sorts of things. But in those moments, connecting with your kid and hoping that that seed was planted in a way in that discussion, that then they do have an impact with others. So that's just endlessly fun. I would say the dark side of that is, right, the opinions that they have, they don't agree with you. And their requests seem a little bit over the top, but I guess that sort of is par for the course of just the parent-child relationship.
That's so funny. Halloween's coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Has she aged out of dressing up for Halloween? I don't know what age that stops.
I don't know when it stops either. I mean, every year they dress up. I was always lazy as a kid. I think I was Dracula, and I don't know how many years in a row. It's just,
well, you were also watching 60 Minutes, so you that's were right. I was way ahead of your time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that they will. And it's shame on me for not knowing what they're, maybe what they're thinking about being, but we're also at this stage where, they're 7 days a week mm-hmm. in activities and mm-hmm. driving here for soccer tournaments and birthdays. And it's just it's an ongoing sort of, you're on the conveyor belt,
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. That's another reason why I don't have children. It's like a lot of work. Before we head out today, will you play a game with me?
Love it. I don't know how good I'll be, but I'm happy to play a game.
It'll be easy. I promise. It's set up so you win, because if you win, our entire non-existent studio audience is going to get a copy of your book, The Narrative Edge. So no pressure.
No pressure.
No one in this room waiting to win a copy. So there you go. The title of your game is called The Storyline Showdown, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to read some true or false questions based on storytelling things, and you get to tell me if they're true or false.
Okay. I'm nervous.
3 out of 6. Don't be nervous.
This is an at-bat for me. Okay. I'm good.
Yeah. You have 6 chances. You get 3 out of 6. Ready? True or false, the word podcast comes from combining iPod and broadcast.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know that one. I'm going to say true just because it sounds like it would be that.
That is true.
It is true. Okay, look, I learned something, Richard. I love this.
Yes, I just saw that video the other day that that the Apple people were talking about that when the iPod came out, and they were like, we have this new thing called podcasting. Okay, and that's what it's from. Number 2, which of these iconic interviews was famously conducted by Oprah Winfrey? Was it Elon Musk in a Tesla, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, Barack Obama on Air Force One, or Taylor Swift at Coachella?
Well, I know she, I watched the interview with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. I remember that they were sort of sitting outside and there was a garden behind them. So I do know that one happened.
Is that your answer?
That's my answer.
That's a good answer. That's correct. All right. True or false? Charles Barkley once said, "I'm not a role model."
Absolutely. And I talk about my interview with Charles Barkley in the book. And I actually, I'm glad you brought that up. I did actually talk about the whole role model element in storytelling in reference to my experience with him. So yes, he did.
Yes, yes, this is true. That is true. You got three correct, the first three correct. Congratulations, you won. Everybody in the non-existent studio audience gets a copy of The Narrative Edge. And I thank you so much for being here.
Well, I thank you for your creativity. Boy, we need this. And I really, really appreciate it and happy to be on. And anytime you need somebody to come and chat with you about the power of story, and I want to learn too. I didn't know about podcasts and the origin of that. Shame on me.
Now you can pass it on to someone else. Love it. Thank you so much for being here, Rod.
Thank you.
Yes. We'll take a break and be right back after this. Don't go away.
Life is difficult. Are you feeling overwhelmed or like you could use a little support for your mental well-being? Visit the Help Hub. It's the most comprehensive and inclusive free online destination for mental health resources, helpful tools, crisis hotlines, and supportive content. Just go to thehelphub.co to find the resources you need when you need them most. Unlike other resource pages, the Help Hub is divided into 16 different categories, ensuring that everyone in every community has access to the resources and support that matches their unique needs. Find the help you're looking for at thehelphub.co.
That's our week of shows, everyone. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Go make your day richer. Go make somebody else's day richer. You've made mine by watching this show, and I love you for it. And maybe this weekend, buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com. It's our floor director. buymeacoffee.com/makeyourdayricher and support the show that way. And then on Monday, I can say, hey, your name here. Thanks for the coffee. All right? Have a good weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.